CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to CityTalk's business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the independent private sector lobby group and business networking club Downtown Liverpool in Business, and every Sunday we look at issues affecting Liverpool and the wider northwest region. Today we're talking fuel, postal services, most notably stamp increases, Wembley, and much more besides. I'm joined in the studio today by one of our regulars, Martin Best from Document Direct, and later this morning I'll be catching up with our man abroad, Michael Taylor, and the chief executive of Everton Football Club, Robert Elston. But it's just me and Martin this morning in the studio. Good to see you, Martin.
Thanks, Frank. Good morning. Good morning, listeners. And good morning to our new listener from the world.
Ah, we get new listeners onto this programme every week, Martin. There's millions of them. Millions of them. Word is spreading. Just before we touch on some of those issues I mentioned, we were discussing the budget last week. I mean, other than this pasty tax, which everybody's got rather excited about over the last couple of days, anything else that stuck out for you?
I think the overall sentiment of it was the thing that really struck me. The government had clearly briefed many journalists and media in the lead up to it, so there wasn't very many pure surprises in it, perhaps, other than the changes for pensioners' personal allowances, which was the one thing that seemed to attract the headlines. But I would say in broad terms, the government had briefed journalists, so there was not going to be too many negative surprises. And I think they were prepared to take a little bit of short-term criticism on a few of the policies that they've introduced, which is great because we shouldn't be driven by the media, I think, as we talked a few weeks ago. You know, it is almost government by knee-jerk reaction to opinion. So things like the 50% rate going down to 45 in a year or so, they'd clearly listened to business. They'd clearly got the sense that that was a negative in terms of attracting entrepreneurs. And a lot of the other things, which are a lot of detail, are clearly going to help businesses, clearly going to help drive this economy.
I overall thought it was a good budget for business. But as they always say, the devil's in the detail.
Indeed.
And it was mentioned last week in our programme by Ian Cobain about this change to the VAT on hot food. No one had really picked it up. And then it transpires this week that, you know, Greggs the Bakers, for example, suffered a massive fall in its share price. But then, you know, when you actually look at the practicalities of that increase, it does seem to hit, you know, poorer families hardest because I know this is a massive generalisation, but hot takeaway food from places like, say, as Greggs and others does tend to be people who are, you know, scrambling around for a bit of cash. Now, government ministers are saying that the reason they introduced this VAT levy, if you like, is because of places like Tesco and other big supermarkets who sell hot chicken now over the counter. But it seems to me that a civil servant has thought he's come up with a bright idea to catch bigger businesses, and actually he's going to hit an awful lot of small retail operators.
Yeah, and of course the people, you know, who you just described, the groups who will tend to buy hot food. I think it's either a civil servant sort of knee-jerk reaction to something, but I think also combined with a number of politicians are slightly out of touch with, you know, the everyday world. I heard someone talk about what's the difference between, I think Cameron went to Eton, somebody else went to Winchester, and they said, oh, it's only £30,000 a year in fees, the difference. However, let's look at £30,000. That is way more than the average annual income for a family in this country. So it would be nice if they reconsider this issue because it's something that they need not have done.
Yeah, it's not going to raise that much money. In fact, you know, again, what's been proved over the years is VAT increases often have the absolute opposite impact of what you would hope. So it doesn't generate more money into the exchequer. It actually goes down. And one of the more successful measures that the last Labour government took, apparently, you know, when you look at the long-term impact of various policies that are introduced, is when they reduced the VAT level. And everyone at the time said, well, what a waste of time that was. And from a business perspective, it was a little bit of a nightmare because of all the paperwork that you had to go through. But in terms of the impact on the economy, and particularly retail, it did do the job. It was positive. So I'm with you, Miles, and I hope they have another look at that. And the other thing that is worth mentioning, the same sort of arena, is that Natalie Hayward was in here the other week and was talking about the fact that VAT in hospitality in the UK is at the standard rate, whilst in Europe it's something like 8% or maybe even less. Now, you know, when politicians in the UK stand up, they always talk about the negatives of Europe. They always say, oh, well, you know, we can't do this because our European partners wouldn't let us. Well, let's have a bit of equalisation when it actually benefits us as citizens for a change.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, you've got the retail and leisure sector. It's a huge part of our economy. It's a big part of the spend. It's a big part of the employment sector. You rise VAT, I think, you know, if you're in France or you're in Spain, you see it at the bottom, 13% in some places, 7.4 or whatever in others. And again, it's a slight lack of a recognition of what really does drive the business and the economy in this country.
Yeah, I think, whether you would go as far as to say they are totally out of touch, but I do think there needs to be a recognition that there's been a shift in terms of the diversity of our economy. And where they seem to still be focusing their efforts, for me, is on bigger businesses and then, you know, manufacturing, the sort of traditional sectors that you would usually recognise and associate with UK PLC. But as you've rightly said, times have moved on, haven't they? And service sector, tourism, destination, you know, all of that is important, particularly for cities like Liverpool.
Yes, I mean, we've seen this in the last 5 or 10 years, haven't we? The increase in pubs, bars, restaurants. And we heard over the last few weeks from the Global Entrepreneurship Congress what is going to drive our economy now is those smaller businesses. So we should be doing whatever we can in the short term to support them.
Mm. But if we do talk about our tourist industry sector, and we do very often on this programme because it seems to be one of the growth areas for the city, the other area where we've seen growth has been professional services. And this week, I noted with some interest that Mark Chadwick, who'd set up this sort of rival organisation to Professional Liverpool, I think it was called
Liverpool City Region, LCR.
So sort of set up to cover the whole of Merseyside, I suppose. Yes. But he's closed it down. Hasn't been the successful venture he'd anticipated.
Yes, and I think looking at it, it's probably a little bit predictable that that would happen. Professional Liverpool, of which Mark was the former chief exec in those wonderful days of NWDA funding, he left when cuts needed to be made. He did a decent job when he was chief exec, widened the awareness of Professional Liverpool, commissioned a great report which highlighted that Liverpool has the second concentration of wealth management businesses in the country, created greater links with the financial sector in London. And then when he left, he did try and set up this alternative group, which I think most people recognise that there wasn't really the necessity for it. If we look at our friends down the M62 Pro Manchester, they've got a strong, vibrant, very clear professional services membership body. Does a great job for Manchester, weaves in with all the other things that we've applauded Manchester for. Liverpool needed just to keep that one group, keep that really sharp focus of a membership body that looks after the interests of professional services.
Yeah, and I think Pro Manchester is in a different sort of league, to be honest with you. I mean, it's been established for 15, maybe even 20 years now. And, you know, unlike Professional Liverpool, actually did plan ahead once they seen that the Northwest Development Agency was likely to be going because they got a chunk of cash from that organisation as well. But they very quickly changed their business model. And, you know, they've increased membership. They've started to do more events. Appointed a very active chief executive, I have to say. And, you know, we operate in Manchester as well, a downtown Manchester, and the two organisations, you know, live and breathe the same sort of business community there very effectively. And we complement one another, hopefully. So it can be done. You can build a strong membership organisation with that branding. But I wonder whether pro Liverpool actually is going to continue to struggle, because even though you've rightly said, Martin, you know, the original group, I suppose, has continued. It's, I've got to be careful here not to upset anybody, but it doesn't seem to me to be pulling up any trees.
I think if you look at the membership, it's increased to about 120 or so now. They've got pretty much most of the major accounting, legal, wealth management, public relations businesses even. I think they are probably struggling a touch with a clear identity and a clear value proposition and a clear voice. But I would say in the last 12 months, John Hall was appointed as chief exec. The chairman is our good old pal Jim Gill. From
Yeah, you know, I've got a lot of time for Jim. So if anybody can deliver something, I'm sure it'll be him. And, you know, as I say, we wish them all the best. But the one thing I would say is that I'm so pleased that there is only one pro Liverpool. If for nothing else, that from the outside looking in, you know, we often do look like a bit of a basket case because of all these agencies that we've got in the public sector. The last thing we needed was the private sector joining in and saying, well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have a couple of organisations to represent professional services as well.
Well, on the public side, we're just about starting to tidy that up. You know, I think Vision are doing a very strong and clear job as a virtually the commercial and business arm of the City Council. That's great. The views that you expressed the other week about the LEP taking over TMP, which I sort of very broadly agree with, I do question its role in vaguely competing or being confused with Vision. So we are just on the verge of now making a lot clearer, and it's not so much clearer for us in the city. We broadly know the landscape. It's for these people and businesses that are looking to inward invest. Who do they go and speak to?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Let's broaden it out to all businesses then. We've talked about the hospitality sector. We've talked about professional services. It's been mentioned this week that stamps, of all things, are going up to 60 pence for a first-class stamp. It's going to go up to 60 pence, which I think in percentage terms about 11%, I read somewhere. I may be wrong with that statistic, but it's a hefty increase. For business, that's a heck of a cost, isn't it, Martin?
It is. I do, though, wonder, and I don't have the figures other than the sentiment, what's happened over the last 10, 15 years with the internet, with email, with communication. Now, I guess yourself, how many letters now land on your desk in the morning?
A lot fewer than it was sort of 5, 6 years ago. That's for sure. I know people are changing the culture, but then again, when you look at that, you wonder what the point of such a hike is, because people are just going to be more determined to find alternative ways of communicating.
Yeah, I don't know if it's connected at all with the pending privatisation of Royal Mail. I'm sure there's something within that. And again, is it a short-term decision? Which, you know, who, again, is this decision going to hurt?
And I worry about the businesses that absolutely do rely on the postal services. So if you look at things like retail, catalogues and those sort of operators, you know, it's going to impact on them.
Yeah, it will. It will. I haven't really seen a rationale for such a hike. I haven't seen a justification for it. It'd be interesting to get a clear view, but it certainly seems something that's gone out of sync.
Yeah, it's strange. I'm with you. I find it rather strange, but I do think it might have a more negative impact than we anticipate at the moment. The final thing before we go to the break. You got petrol in your car at the moment, obviously.
But I was lucky on Tuesday morning to fill up my cheer flute.
But what was that all about? I mean, what are government ministers doing? Panicking people.
Yeah.
Because before Frances Maud spoke, everything was fine, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And again, it comes down to, you know, my current hobby horse. A lot of ministers are so out of touch. I say, old chap, fill up the jerry can. Do you own a jerry can?
I don't exactly.
And you actually look at, apparently, the average contents of a jerry can are beyond a health and safety limit for the amount of petrol that you can get.
Yeah, the fire service weren't very happy with them, really. But I just seen all the queuing and garages running out of petrol. And then we get told that actually, even if the strike is to be sort of long term and decided upon, it's like we've got 9 days' supply.
Yeah.
And then, you know, likelihood is, fingers crossed, it'll all be resolved. So, government ministers, please, don't feel obliged to say anything about everything, yeah, because very often you get it wrong. Anyway, we get it right on this programme. Stay with us. We'll be back after this break with more discussion about the world of business.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back to the programme. I'm joined in the studio this week by Martin Best from Document Direct. And on the phone line now, joining me from Sunny Ireland, I believe, is the events producer of business magazine Insider, Michael Taylor. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Frank.
Great to speak to you. I described you in my introduction as our man abroad because the last time I spoke to you were in Mipham. And as I say, you're in Ireland today. And I want to talk to you about your recent trip to Silicon Valley. As you'll know, Michael, Liverpool hosted the Global Entrepreneurship Congress recently. 120 countries represented, some great names speaking to us, people like Richard Branson, Michael Heseltine, Sir Terry Leahy. But you actually went to Silicon Valley, which I suppose has almost become the heartbeat of enterprise and entrepreneurship. Were you impressed by what you found there?
Oh, more than impressed, Frank. I don't think there's a superlative that can possibly describe how impressed I was. It was an incredible experience. Some of the people, I think, came back from that trip. We were with a group of 18 of us. Some of them came back from the trip with something akin to a religious conversion. It was genuinely life-changing because you met people and you just embraced this spirit of enterprise, give it a go. If you're going to fail, fail early. I mean, how many times does anyone in business ever say that to you in the UK? It's all, you know, it's all a bit more cautious. The trip itself involved visiting two universities, a bank, an angel investment network, and eight different businesses, including Google, LinkedIn, Symantec, who do the Norton security software, as well as a design business, a construction business, the people that make headsets for receptionists and salespeople on telephones called Plantronic. And I can't even begin to describe or even answer the question which bit was best, because it all was. But if I was to take one thing away from it to describe it, it was that there was an energy. Mm. There was a fantastic collective energy, not only from the people that you meet out there and that when you visit their businesses, and that includes taking a slide instead of the stairs at Google and all the little gimmicks like that, but actually how entrepreneurial and focused everybody is. It's amazing. Yeah, recommend it to anyone.
Is it a big cultural shift then from the UK?
Yeah, it is, and it isn't. You've got to just hang out with the right people. I'm in Belfast at the end of March. I've been over hosting a conference there, and I sensed a massive impatience there as well, with people wanting to create a better world, to get on, to shift that mentality away from moaning and looking at your shoes and thinking everything's rubbish, so there's nothing we can do about it, but actually getting on and making a better life for yourself and de facto a better world for everyone else to live in. So there is a difference. One of the key quotes that I took away from it that I think all of us in Liverpool, Manchester, Leeds, wherever, and I know you've got ideas about doing this, Frank, I know it's close to your heart. It's about creating that connectivity between all sorts of different people who can help you, creating a perfect storm of networking and passing on opportunities. This professor at Berkeley called Jerry Engel, he said, "There I was at my book club. I was there with a Nobel Prize winning physicist, a couple of VCs, a couple of entrepreneurs, one of the guys from Cisco, a couple of the Facebook guys, you know, the usual crew." I don't know about where you hang out in of a normal Thursday night, Frank. It sounded to me a little bit like a downtown event, but it shows to me actually the connections between academia, science, yeah, big business, investment, and also people who've who just want to get a good idea and get on. It seems that's not a bad starting point.
Mm. You mentioned there that you visited a bank and an angel investment network.
Yeah.
One of the things that's always struck me when I've spoken to people from the States is that their attitude in terms of giving equity in the business away seems to be far more relaxed than UK businesses. Was that something that you found to be the case?
Yeah, because people have got that impatience. It's not about sitting on an asset they're going to hold for all of their life. It's about giving something a go and using other people's money to do it. And they realise that if they are fast and they are urgent and they're a gazelle business that wants to run really quickly, that they might need extra investment to do that, and just sitting on it and hopefully it'll steadily grow organically doesn't satiate that need that they've got for creating a fast business. So they have that willingness to do it. And interestingly, they're also that willingness to reinvest. I mean, we went to this investment forum called Keretsu. Sounds Japanese, doesn't it? But I can assure you it wasn't. We were having a really nice presentation with one of their guys, and then the doors burst open, and this guy walked in with his check jacket and his shirt open, silver hair. I'd place him in his late 50s. He was called Randy, and he was the founder of the business. He goes, "What are you guys sitting down here for? We've got entrepreneurs upstairs pitching to us. Do you want to come and watch?" And honestly, it was like that. And we did, and we stood around the edge of the room while a live Dragon's Den-style situation was going on in front of us. And the guy who was pitching was actually rubbish. So, you know, before we get into this idea, I was seduced by everybody we met. He had an idea that I shouldn't really say what it is, but I'll tell you what, it wasn't as good as Late Rooms, but it was in the same space. But there's the thing, Frank, they still thought, yeah, let's push him on to the next stage.
Yeah,
because they were frightened that they missed an opportunity.
Yeah.
Even though his pitch was bad, you know, this urgency, well, let's give him a go. Maybe he needs some extra help. Well, you know, we haven't got time for that. He'll get the money from somewhere else.
Mm.
You know, right, he still might make it. And some of them were going, I'm out, oh, I'm out. But the others were saying, no, actually, we don't want to miss out. We don't want to be down the yacht club next week and someone says, oh, yeah, I back that guy that you passed over.
Yeah, they don't want to lose the next Google, do they?
No.
And I just wonder whether the banking crisis and the fact that banks are still being very cautious in who they lend to at the moment actually opens opportunities for businesses now, and they can start looking for the alternative financial routes like VCs, like business angels, because not just the cash, you actually get the expertise alongside that, don't you?
Yeah, there's lots of different... We've talked many times before about equity gaps, where there are the gaps in provision that the banks used to fill because they just write checks for silly amounts of money and threw caution to the wind. I mean, that's a gross simplification, I know. But one of the things that was hidden deep in the bowels of the budget was an extension, once again, of EIS relief. I can't remember what it stands for. But basically, it means that entrepreneurs or wealthy people can write off a significant amount of money and invest in a small business.
Hmm.
And they've increased the allowances that they can do that. That opens up all sorts of opportunities for angel investment. And I hope that people in Liverpool with a business idea will maybe hope their advisors will push them in that direction, because there's huge opportunities to do that and huge pipelines to take to these people, because, you know, it's not always obvious.
Yeah, and I know you went to Google, and Google, as you know, have done an awful lot of work in Liverpool over the past 12 months trying to get companies and encourage companies to get online. What was it like then, the Google empire?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. We didn't go to the main headquarters in Mountain View in Silicon Valley. We went to their San Francisco city office. We weren't allowed to take photographs. It's all a bit top secret. But I took one thing away from that, and it's, all right, yeah, Google's a cool business. They've got this message, this logo, don't do evil, which is all fine. But at their heart, they are a ruthless commercial organization, and they are going to dominate the advertising space. Everything else that they do all leads into funding. It leads into getting more and more market share and dominance from paid searches, from linked advertising. So, you know, I open my Gmail account, and I'll be sending an email to you about Everton, and somebody will be offering me Everton memorabilia.
Mm.
You know, it's really clever stuff. It's smart, but it's also ruthless, and they're prepared to push the boundaries. So, yeah, it was amazing. I mean, Google do this thing called 20% days or 20% time, where they give all their employees this idea that they can spend 20% of their time doing other cool stuff. And if Google will back them if it's a new business idea. That sounds great in principle, and you think, oh, I couldn't afford to let my staff do stuff like that. The reality is it's 120% time. Yeah, they don't put breakfast on at between 7 and 8 in the morning because they like cooking. They put that on because they want people in early.
Yeah.
And then they'll put tea on at night, or tea. I don't think they call it tea in California. But, you know, they'll put meals on in the evening, again, to encourage people to stay late and work late.
Mm.
And it's a phenomenally young organisation. There was this guy who was doing a presentation to us, and he had one of his colleagues came to present. I thought she was in the same class as my kids who are in primary school. You know, you just meet so many young people with loads of energy. It's brilliant. But like I said, you know, also right through the age ranges.
And I know the business that facilitated the trip was Winning Pitch, and John Leach has been on this programme a number of times. He's a big advocate of networking, of growth, of really driving your business forward. So is this part of an ongoing programme, Michael? Can companies from Liverpool get involved?
Just to explain, John Leach from the management consultancy Winning Pitch is part of the consortium of organisations delivering this government programme called Coaching for Growth. It's going to be called something else, I believe, eventually. And that really is making these connections. It's taking these kind of lessons from something like a learning journey, which we took to California, and to embed that into businesses and to embed some of the programs that you can learn on a trip like this into an overall longer journey to make a business better, faster, leaner, smarter and better connected.
Mm. And Martin, as somebody who is involved with Paver Smith as well as Document Director, trip to Google, you wouldn't mind that, would you?
I think I could handle that. Just listening to Michael's enthusiasm, which he's clearly gained, that's the thing that strikes me, combined with a willingness for everyone to share the ideas. It's that freshness, isn't it, I think, Michael, that stimulates it even more.
Yeah, we're going to have an event on the 26th of April, somewhere in the Northwest, to bring together some of the people that were on the trip, to explain a little bit more. They'll have made observations already, because there were people from Cambridge, Glasgow, all over the north of England as well. We're going to have an event where we can hopefully convey that energy to a lot more people. So do look out for that on the High Growth Foundation's website. That's the organisation that I think John Leach wants to really take on, build some of the connections between fast-growing businesses in this space.
And I think the other thing, Michael, is that, you know, when you go on a trip like that with colleagues, you often get more out of it, don't you, because you can buzz off one another.
Yeah, that was when I've been asked, what did I get out of it more than anything else, what was the best thing? The best thing was actually some of the bus, you know, it sounds mad, but some of the bus trips between, because you're talking about it, and everyone would move around, we'd inform cliques, we'd just like talk about the ideas that we'd had and what we took out of it, and people would, you know, if one guy on the trip was a serial investor in technology businesses. He would always ask the smartest question in the room, so everyone wanted to sit next to Jeff in between trips to see what he learned. But that collective group of people to share, to knock ideas around, to debate, was just amazing. Do you know, I'm starting my own business in summer this year, and I tell you what, I don't know where to start. It's just fantastic.
So for people listening out there who obviously get a daily digest of negativity, doom and gloom, Robert Peston, your message to them?
I'll just get out there and do it. You know, you can't let people put you off. I always find it amazing that that we even get up in the morning sometimes with the drip of gloom. And yet, do you know what? However bad you think it is, however bad people think you've had it in Liverpool, you know, I've spent a good part of the last week in Northern Ireland, and if they can do it, if they can pick themselves up by their bootstraps and put together all their recent history and their recent past, and they've got a much more positive outlook, I feel. The people who want to get on certainly have, you know, and they're slowly taking down the murals, and they're slowly finding the connections and building up businesses and not just expecting to get a job in the public sector. If they can do it, anyone can.
Great to speak to you as always, Michael, and no doubt we will catch up soon. Final question to you, because we're going to be speaking to Robert Elston from Everton in a second. Yeah. Are Blackburn going to survive? Because I know you're a big Rovers fan.
No, I don't think they will. I think they'll go down. It's all about, are there three worst teams? Personally, I think there are probably two worst teams, and that's not good enough. I think Mark Hughes is probably the best manager we've ever had at Ewood Park in my lifetime. He'll get QPR out of it. I think Bolton have got some collective family spirit that's been shown in spades while they've recovered from the horror of Fabrice Muamba's recent collapse on the pitch at Spurs. I think they'll get out of it, which leaves three, us, Wigan and Wolves.
Oh, well, I hope you're wrong, because it's much easier to get to Blackburn than it is to QPR. But good luck for the rest of the season. I'll catch up with you soon, mate.
Thanks, Frank. Bye.
Cheers, Michael. That was Michael Taylor, who is the events producer for Insider Business Magazine. After the break, as I've just mentioned there to Michael, we'll be talking to Everton's chief executive, Robert Elston. All things Wembley. Come on, you Blues. Stay with us. We'll be back right after this.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the final part of the programme. And you may have noticed a little bit more chirpiness in the voice of me and my studio guest this week, Martin Best. That's because this week has been a great week to be an Evertonian. Of course, Everton secured a place in the FA Cup semi-final on April the 14th against another smaller team from the city. And it's going to be a great weekend of sport for Liverpool because on the same day we have the Grand National. I'm delighted that the chief executive of Everton Football Club, Robert Elston, has been able to join me on the phone this morning. Robert, good morning to you.
Morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm absolutely fantastic and I'm sure... that, like me, you've had a bit of a spring in your step since Tuesday night.
Yeah. Some people have said it's more like a silly grin across my face. But, yeah, no, we're all smiling here. And Tuesday night was fantastic in every way, shape and form. Even the dressing down we got from the Northumbrian police, it was quite funny. We were on a staff bus and myself and Sir Philip Carter were sat in the front row and one of the local constabulary knocked on the door and marched up the steps and looked straight at me and Sir Philip and warned us about our behaviour, which was quite amusing. But no, it's been a very good week. It's been a good week.
Well, they need to get their own act in order if the trip for the team coach is anything to go by. I believe David Moyes gave them a bit of a dressing down.
Absolutely. Well, about 6:45, I got wind of the delays. But I think after the event, I think we all agreed maybe it's... gave them that little bit of an incentive, not that they needed it. I think they were thoroughly professional from start to finish. I think they were at Goodison as well, and I think they were at Swansea, and I think the signs are great at the minute. I think, you know, there's that real desire back, and I think this professionalism about, you know, doing the job, and everybody played to plan, everybody did exactly what they were asked to do, and you could see that in the performance, and it was a great performance. Mm.
I was speaking to Steve Hothersall, who's the sports presenter here at City and obviously follows Liverpool, and Steve was saying to me how together the players and the club seems to be at the moment, and I know that it's an old cliche, but there does seem to be this family spirit almost at Everton, and it's there during the bad times, but Moisey and the leadership just seem to have galvanised that, as I say, most particularly in the lads who are going out on the pitch at the moment.
No, I think that's right, Frank, and you know, when I first joined Everton, you hear a lot of talk about Belfield and days gone by, and there's the famous Alan Ball quote that we've got on the big screens about once Everton's touch you, nothing will be the same again. You kind of wonder what it's all about. And, you know, I've been here now 7 years and I kind of think I know what it's all about. And people don't like leaving Everton. People, when they come back from having left Everton, they, you know, they come back with a smile on their face. They get a great reception. You've seen that with, you know, with Mikel and one or two other players who come back. Stephen Pino is a great example of that. And, you know, there's something special about it. I think stability and continuity has to be a big part of that. And then I think it's the selection of players with good attitudes, winning mentalities. And it's the combination of all of that, Frank. But, yeah, no, it's good. And team spirit, confidence, togetherness is... It's so critical, and you know, I think we're reaping the rewards of that.
Just in terms of the business of all of this, then, because obviously you have to take charge of what must be a mammoth task now of sorting tickets out and transport and all the sort of things that fans demand of a football club when it gets to Wembley. Up to now, not only as I think the organisation in terms of getting the information out there being superb, but it appears that the allocation hasn't been too unreasonable either.
No, and when we get to the final, it will be quite a bit tougher. The workload for the semis is substantial, Frank, and the workload is substantial, but it's a great problem to have. You know, we let you into a little bit of a secret. You know, football clubs are incredibly superstitious, and we absolutely didn't want to tempt fate pre-Sunderland. And there we start thinking about the semi-final, and of course we never really would own up to it, but we did. And so we were well and truly planned, knowing, you know, what we were going to do if we got through, and that included, you know, texts and emails out to season ticket holders pretty much as soon as the final whistle had blown. So we were organised in that respect. I think then, you know, Wednesday morning, despite everybody getting home at about 3 o'clock, we were all back in again early. Spent a long time yesterday looking at the allocation and essentially trying to make sure that everybody who, you know, has a real genuine entitlement to a ticket gets considered, gets looked after as best we can. Now, you know, for the semi, it's, you know, it's 31,500. For the final, it will be a lot less. And I think, you know, the fans will remember last time when we played Chelsea, and I absolutely picked up the cudgel, if you like, and went to the FA and said, this is crazy that, you know, when we played Chelsea, pretty much half the stadium didn't care who won or lost.
Yeah.
And that's just mad. And you know, it fell victim of, you know, all the, you know, the revolving doors at the FA, where I just started to feel I was making traction with one chief exec when a new one came in. And so, sadly, I don't think a lot has happened in terms of, you know, certainly the final allocation. But, you know, I think in terms of the semi, you know, I guess all we would ask fans to do is be patient with us. Every season ticket holder will get one. And if you've been coming to Goodison reasonably regularly this season, you know, probably 5 games under your belt, then you've got a very, very good chance of getting a ticket. We are managing it through our website plus a phone service. So the website, you know, is the place to do it. You can do it, obviously, at your leisure. You can pick your seat. And I think, please, if you can, just try to use the phones as a fallback. But, you know, obviously, we're confident we'll get through it. And as I said, it's just a bit of patience from the fans that, the people who, are entitled to get a ticket, and that's based on loyalty, will be getting tickets. So, you know, stick with us on that one, I guess, Frank.
Can I just go back to the administrative arrangements, Robert? Because I know in the past Everton have been criticised, but the point you've just made there about the club being geared up so well, I mean, I had an email by 9:30 on Wednesday morning with all the details laid out very, very clearly as to what I had to do as a season ticket holder to secure my ticket. And I think, you know, we're very quick, aren't we, to point the finger and moan when things go wrong. I don't think this is just Everton. I think this is just generally as a country. In fact, we've just been talking to someone who's made a visit to the state recently, and he was saying how positive things over there are. So credit to all the staff and the team there for making that work so well.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Frank. And it's not simple either. You know, it's 31,000, but if you think about the potential claimants on those tickets, from season ticket holders to lounge members to shareholders to our sponsors and partners to the players and their families to the manager to the directors, you know, we've got a long, long list of people who have genuine entitlement to it. So juggling that, and at all times, you know, our priority is to reward the lads and the fans who come and see us on a regular basis. Absolutely top of the pile. So there's a lot of work goes into it. I mean, yeah, I do appreciate the the vote of thanks there. I mean, it's interesting, after we'd drawn to Sunderland, you know, we all got home Saturday night, emails are just going mad, and all we're thinking about is how can we maximise the travelling support to Sunderland. So it's 8 o'clock on Saturday night, and we all should be doing something different. But, you know, the senior team here is just, you know, preoccupied with one thing, which is dragging 6,500 Evertonians up to the Stadium of Light, and that works. So there is an awful lot of work. Listen, you know, it's a phenomenal job, and Saturday's, you know, the semi-final will be a great reward for everybody. You know, it's a spring in the step for all the staff, all the fans, everybody. So it's a nice place to work, but, you know, I do appreciate that vote of thanks.
Yeah, and it was a fabulous, fabulous following that we took up to Sunderland, and credit to all the supporters. But
one day, Frank, I might be brave enough to come and sit behind the post with everybody. I mean, we had about 70 staff up there, and they were texting me about how great it was behind the goals. Well, and I had to sit on my hands being polite next to David Miliband. It wasn't quite the same.
I'll tell you what, the television was bouncing, so Lord knows what it was like on the terraces itself. Final thing I want to touch on, more good news for the club this week, this deal with Nike.
Yeah, no, terrific deal for us. you know, obviously everybody knows Nike and, you know, what a massive success story. You know, I think 40 years old and have gone from nothing to the world's biggest sports brand, and they know how to grow a business, they know how to work in the sports sector. So really exciting for us to be able to partner with them. You know, they're famous for their marketing, they're famous for their product design, they're famous for their innovation. They also, you know, have got a pretty impressive family of other clubs and players in the stable, if you like. So really exciting for us. We're looking forward to working with them on all of those aspects. You know, I think they can help us also on some distribution through their Nike stores. But most of all, I think I'm just looking forward to working with their creative brains and kit design. And obviously we've seen next year's kits, the home kit, I think is fantastic. And I think, you know, it will fly out the door and that'll be on sale, I think, in mid-June. So a lot to be excited about. And, you know, to be working with Nike, to be in that family, you know, again, I think rubber stamps the club's credentials.
Fantastic. And many congratulations, Robert. It's been great to speak to you this morning. Thanks for joining us.
And what we can do, what we can do if Nike is just take the words to the semi-final. Just do it.
Absolutely. Well, as well as my son tells me, it's Greek for victory as well, Martin, so we can have that one as well.
Excellent.
Fingers crossed. I'm sure there's many people listening this morning that won't wish you well, but I most certainly do, and I'll see you soon, Robert.
Thank you. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you. That's Robert Elston, the chief executive, very happy chief executive of Everton Football Club, and rightly so. Last couple of minutes of the programme, Martin, just it is great for the city, isn't it? Let's be sort of serious for a second. Take our football colours off. There is an absolute buzz now around the city, and there will be right up to the lead to the 14th of April, won't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And combined with the semi-final, we're both vying to be ahead of each other. I know we'd rather be vying to be in the top four between us, but nevertheless, there's going to be a real combative spirit over the next few weeks. We're 2 points behind. We can be above them come Saturday. We can be above them in Wembley and march on to the final.
Well, you never know what's going to happen in football, do you? I mean, the league form from Liverpool since January has been awful. Everton's has been great. But, you know, never mind Wembley allocation tickets. I don't know why Everton aren't going to the Premier League and asking why the season can't start in January in future.
Yeah.
Such has been our performances. But the other point that that Robert was making there was about Everton actually putting coaches on for the support that went away from home. And again, we often come on and criticise the fact that football is big business. But in a sense, you know, we've got to recognise that both Everton and Liverpool, when they can and when it's practical to do so, do involve the supporters and give a little bit of added value back.
Yeah, they do, and credit to both clubs. I think, you know, we've both been at Wembley for some of the semi-finals and finals that both clubs have played in, and there is a wonderful buzz, a wonderful atmosphere, and almost, probably until kick-off, a great camaraderie between both sets of supporters. So, you know, we were both there, I'm sure, for the Chelsea and United games. It is going to be a tremendous day out.
A very important point, though, because Liverpool is in the spotlight for all the right reasons on that day. It's essential that people actually, you know, enjoy themselves but behave themselves as well, because there has been a degree of nastiness in some of the Merseyside derbies recently. We can't allow that to impact on the day, on the 14th of April, because win or lose, you know, at the end of the day, the city, as I say, is in the spotlight, and we've got to make sure that it's positive news at the end of that because of the behaviour of the supporters. And certainly, you know, they go all over the world, Everton and Liverpool fans. There's never a problem. So hopefully coming together in London will be fine.
And you'll remember the joint singing of Mersey Pride in the 84.
Yeah, and I think, you know, last season we were sort of all a little bit in the doldrums because City and United had made it to Wembley for a semi-final. It seemed as though they were going to go on and absolutely dominate the whole of the football environment in England, at least. And it's just nice that Liverpool and Everton have been able to do the same this season. And as you say, not too bad a position in the league. We'll see what happens for the remainder of the season. But listen, thanks for joining me this morning.
You're very welcome.
Thank you to my telephone guests, Michael Taylor and, of course, Robert Elston. Most of all, thank you for listening. And, of course, thanks, as always, to our producer, Jonathan Dee. Have a great week, and don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. Listen and log on to great music and great conversation on City Talk 105.9.